And as promised, here we go.
You're listening to Audio Culture on 95BFM.
Thanks to Audio Culture, Iwi Waiata, the Noisy Library of New Zealand Music. Go to audioculture.co.nz.
All right, on the line we should have Graham Reid. Are you there?
Yes, you do, Johnny. How are you?
I'm good. Now, you've just written an article on the St. James for Audio Culture, just published the other day, in fact. Do you want to give us a bit of background on the story?
Yeah, sure. I've lived in the city for a very, very long time, and so the St. James was a place that I went to actually as a kid, you know, like it was a movie theatre, so it was a very popular movie theatre in its day, and then, of course, over a period of time, it turned into a venue for all sorts of live acts, which we'll talk about in a moment. But, of course, as many people know, in 2007 there was a fire in the St. James and it was closed for a long period of time. There was some restoration work done on it. It is a Heritage One, you know, listed building, so you can't kind of renovate it. You know, you can't make it look like an airport or something. You really do have to just restore the interior. And so they did that, and intermittently over the years there were shows there. But it's all stopped now. There's a, you know, complex financial arrangement behind it. The developer wanted to put up a block of apartments behind it, or on top of it, basically. That all fell through, so the money fell through, and now, unfortunately, the St. James is just falling apart, literally.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think the thing about the St. James, and just for some people who don't know where it is, because obviously a lot of people have never been inside it, it was built by the same architect who designed the St. James in Wellington, but also the State Theatre in Sydney, a guy called Henry Eli White. And it's actually contemporaneous with the Civic directly across the road. They both opened in 1928-29. And it is considered, what it was at the time, considered one of the great, you know, picture palaces, they used to call them, because mm-hmm. it was just so beautiful.
Yes.
And it runs between Queen Street and it's Lawn Street at the back, I'm pretty sure, outside the library. So people could actually use the whole lobby area as a thoroughfare for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was just part of that entertainment precinct in central Auckland. But latterly, nothing has happened in there. And, you know, some kids went, or some people went in there. We don't know how old they were, and just graffitied the place. And the wiring has been stolen. The copper pipes have been stolen. And it is literally just falling down. So mm-hmm. a cynic will say, what's happening there is that they are just simply letting it rot until it just either falls down or somebody says, okay, no, we've got to pull it down.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was Chloe Swarbrick, you know, came out and pointed out, you know, this is happening at the St. James. But let's be honest, you know, she's not the first person who's pointed this out. And you know, famously, Dame Judi Dench and Sir Ian McKellen, those actors who were here from Britain, I think they're involved in Lord of the Rings or something. You know, those people came out in support of, you know, restoring the St. James. But because the second they left the country, the idea went with them. You know, mm-hmm. there was no great support. There is actually a group that sort of looks after, you know, trying to promote the St. James, but they've been inaudible, shall we say, lately. And it was good that Chloe Swarbrick sort of raised the issue again and took a camera inside just to show how tragic and derelict it is. Mm. I imagine some people would actually know what it looks like in the inside because of the Avondale Bowling Club video for, what was it, Days Gone By, which was shot in there. And, you know, if you look up that, and if you go to Audio Culture, that clip is actually there. You would just see the state of disrepair. And that was a few years ago. Now it's got worse. So that's what prompted the article. And essentially what I did was, I knew a bit of the history, obviously, but I just asked a whole bunch of people for what they remembered from the St. James. Mm. Well, of course, you know, as you can see what's come in.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you know, for me, you know, some of the best gigs I've ever seen were in the St. James. It's definitely one of my favourite venues to attend a show at. It felt like the perfect size, and it had that sort of grand feeling while you're in there. So it feels like a special occasion, you know, if you've ever attended anything there. And it felt like a venue. I'd never played there, but you know, you sort of had the feeling that, you know, an international touring artist might enjoy playing in there because it was such a cool room.
Oh, yeah, I think, I doubt that anybody would have a bad word to say that. Although, funnily enough, when Jeff Buckley played there, and that's a concert that so many people remember, he lit some incense on stage because he said it was a bit smelly. I remember some clown, typical bloody New Zealander, yelled out, "Hippie," at that point. Mm-hmm. but, you know, people remember shows like that. And the one that, you know, what I did was I just put a message out on Facebook and I said, and I made it very clear, twice I said in this, like, three sentences, local acts. I'm interested in what people remember of local artists. Mm-hmm. But the first person who responded said, Miles Davis. Yeah. yes, Miles Davis did play there. Not a local act, unfortunately, but Miles Davis played there, and that was a very memorable night. Jeff Buckley, and then just this whole litany of international artists who played there. It was extraordinary how many people played there. And of course, it was a venue for locals too. Internationals, all due respect, they come and go. You know, they're here for 24 hours and then they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, locals could play in there, and people had residencies every week. They would, you know, be DJing or something like that. And you know, there was the Seven Worlds Collide thing that Neil Finn put together with members of Pearl Jam and Radiohead. And
that was about a week long, wasn't it? I went to one of those shows and it was amazing.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you know, and he and Neil Finn and Tim have played in there a number of times. You know, if those guys want to play in there, that tells you something about what a quality venue it was.
Yes,
I don't know if anybody would even want to go inside the door at the moment. It would just be so sad.
Mm. Now, Graham, you've selected a couple of tracks for us. Shall we play a song and then come back and dig into this a bit more?
Okay, you play one of the ones I've chosen, and then I can tell you afterwards why.
Okay, I guess we just briefly chatted about Miles Davis, so let's play this. Time After Time. Who played it first, Cyndi Lauper or Miles Davis?
Yeah, Miles Davis, pretty hip guy, you know. worked his way around Cyndi Lauper's time after time. Look, I'm sure that appealed to Miles Davis because it was quite, you know, it's quite a minimal melody.
Yes.
And you can do a lot with a minimal melody. Mm. So, and that was one of the pieces that he played when he played at the St. James, which I'm pretty sure was the late 80s, like 89 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that you were saying before about this, like almost like a sense of occasion when you go there, because it felt so attractive to be in that beautiful space.
Mm.
And I remember that night as having a real sense of occasion. The people seemed to get dressed up to go and see Miles Davis. They knew that this was going to be special.
Yes.
And of course, you know, when my parents, when they moved to this country, you know, when my parents went out in the like 1950s and 60s, they got dressed up to go to the movies.
Yes.
My dad would come home from work and change into a different suit, and my mum would put on a bonnet or something, you know. And the St. James was one of those places that almost required you to take a night out quite seriously. But then, you know, in the 80s and 90s, it became, you know, really, you know, hip-hop kids were coming in, and mm-hmm. there were dance parties and all that kind
yes.
of thing. So as a venue, it was a really flexible venue. There were different spaces in it. There was an interesting mezzanine area upstairs. So, you know, people could go and have a civilized drink and go to one of the other rooms there. And it expanded, of course. It became the Regent and the Odeon cinemas in there. So there was all this sort of flexible space.
Mm.
That's what made it such a perfect venue. And let's be honest, location. It's right in the center of town.
Yes. I mean, what can we hope? What would be the best outcome? Is it basically up to the Auckland Council, the central government, to bail out this private property owner and refurb the building?
Yeah, you know, I think we have to be absolutely pragmatic about this. This is not about nostalgia now. You know, we can all say how wonderful it was, as we've been saying. That's all a wonderful thing. The fact is that it comes down to money.
Yes.
We have to be really blunt about that. The money has to come from somewhere. The person who wants to develop it wants to put like I believe it's a 39-story building above it. That was the plan, and that would have allowed financing to renovate the theatre, restore the theatre, you know, back to its original. But that seems to be, that project didn't happen for some reason. I believe the money didn't come through. And so now it's just sitting in this kind of weird limbo, and has been for a very long time, much more than a decade now.
Mm.
And certainly the Auckland City Council has, I think, some considerable obligation to look after it. And if somebody suggests to me one more time that, you know, we really need that bloody stadium down on the waterfront, I say no. We do not.
Yes.
We need the St. James restored. Because a stadium, let's be honest about it, a stadium is empty most of the time. Whereas a theatre like the St. James, that would be working 5-6 nights a week. Mm-hmm. Shows would be going in there, theatre companies would be going in there, ballet, you know, all of that would be going in there. That seems to me a much more significant investment in the city, and a cultural investment too. It'd be nice to see that sort of prioritised over sport.
Mm. Someone's just sent a text through saying the council has earmarked a 10 to 15 mil towards the St. James. Had that been spent already, or is that?
I believe it is just, as that person says, it's 15 mil and it's been earmarked. But, you know, these days that 15 million would just go nowhere.
Yeah,
that would just
totally.
Be kind of, you know, that would just be the survey to figure out what needs to be done.
Yes.
That will disappear. You know, they'll be able to tell you what needs to be done, but then the money's got to be found to actually do it.
Mm. Yeah. Man. Damn it! Now...
Yeah, I know. It is so goddamn frustrating because it is, you know, it's a heritage building.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Now, we've got another couple of tracks lined up, Graham. Should we play this Pretenders? Should we play it, and then you can tell us why you've chosen the song after?
Okay, sure.
Here we go. This is Back on the Chain Gang.
picture of you. Oh, what hijacked my world at night? To a place in the past we've been cast out of. Pigeon from hell. Oh, threw sand in our eyes and descended like flies. Put us back on the train.
Got Graham Reed on the line here from Audio Culture. He's just recently published an article about the St. James Theatre, having a yarn about the St. James and some artists that have played there. And Graham, you've selected, obviously, Back on the Chain Gang.
There's quite a specific reason for this. I have a friend, a Thai friend, and he has lived here for quite a while now. And when the Pretenders came to play, I said, you want to come along and see this show? Well, he doesn't get out to a lot of shows. You know, he likes rock music, but he doesn't get out to them. And so we went along to the St. James. This guy just could not believe that, you know, we could literally walk right down to the front and stand at Chrissy Hyde's feet.
Mm.
And he was just absolutely gobsmacked by that. And I just remember the look on his face. And, you know, that was possible to do at these shows, you know, where it was a standing show down the front.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, because it's a big space, it's a broad space, so it's not like, say, the Power Station, you know, or the King's Arms or anything like that. This was a broad space, so you could actually, I found the trick was you walk down the left-hand side as you approach the stage, and you could literally stand at the lip of the stage. And I remember going with some friends to see the Proclaimers, and again, same thing. You could just walk straight down to the front. And it wasn't that there wasn't anybody there. These had big crowds. Of course, it was the Pretenders, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But that was possible to do because of the breadth of the stage.
Yes.
And I just always remember that occasion because, you know, he was just gobsmacked by that, and also just how beautiful this theatre was. Mm. And he'd never been inside it before, and I said, well, man, we're going to get you to the Civic now because, you know, built in exactly the same time. But, you know, this the St. James is in what they call the Spanish Renaissance style. And Lord knows what the Civic is. It's just kind of this, what is it, weird Indian Baroque or something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, St. James has a sense of a style about it. And as you agreed, when you go there, there was a sense of occasion. Mm. And so that was the only reason I played that. I mean, yes. I know I should be playing all local stuff, but we'll have a local one in a moment. But, you know, just because that was such a strong memory for me, and it's one of those occasions where you see something as somebody else sees it. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's always important, isn't it? You know, we take certain things for granted. You get very blasé. I'd been there so often I hadn't thought about it. But to walk in with him and see his face,
yes,
just light up with this, and then to be that close to the artist. And even if you're sitting in the circle, which is where I sat for Jeff Buckley, and you've got any number of shows, you did feel close,
yes,
close to the artist.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Nick Cave from one of those boxes there, and even though he was way down there, you almost felt you could reach out and touch him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was, you just got that sense of closeness with the artist that you don't get, say, if you're upstairs at the Civic, for example, which is a much bigger venue.
Is there anywhere that people could rally together and I guess register their support for saving the St. James?
There is a petition going around. There's an online petition. I'm sure that if you go to Chloe Swarbrick's website, but I've seen one that Renee Jones has posted on Facebook. So, you know, yes, there are petitions out there.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with petitions is that, you know, they sort of get a bit, they're divided up, you know, like if you get 8 petitions all running at the same time,
mm-hmm,
you're probably better just to sort of head for one. And, you know, I don't think Chloe Swarbrick's got any clout in this matter. Let's be honest about it. What she can do, however, has raised the profile of this. And that's, you know, in a sense, that's the best thing that can happen right now.
Mm-hmm.
Get enough people behind it saying something has got to be done. And maybe somewhere along the line, the impetus will, you know, go back to the government. And let's be honest, though, the government has got so many things on its plate, it's pretty broke after COVID.
Mm.
So I don't think saving the St. James is a priority.
High on the list.
Yeah, you know, I'd love to see one of these mayoral candidates say, that is going to be my priority.
Yes.
You know, I want to see that sorted in the next, you know, 3 years or something like that, at least a start made on it. But, you know, they all just talk about rates and rubbish and things like that. And certainly, you know, Queen Street does need to be looked after right now. It's a disgrace.
Mm.
And, you know, this could be just a jewel in the crown at that top part of town.
Yes.
And it's in that entertainment precinct that they always talk about. It's right there.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got, you know, the 3 of the best or 4 of the best venues, Altair Centre, Town Hall, Civic, and St. James, all right next door to each other.
And you've got the Q Theatre and the Classic Comedy Club right there too. So, yes, all these things are right there. And as I say, you know, the library is right behind it. The art gallery is just up the road. You know, this could be the cultural centre of Auckland.
Yes. Yeah, totally. Yeah, it could definitely, you know, give it a spruce and breathe some life back into the very heart of the city. It turns out this drives a lot of texts through to 53095. There's a lot of people getting fired up. I've had quite a nice one come through just saying, the St. James is part of the soul of Auckland and we need to restore this instead of losing it like the Mercury. And like Graham said, who needs more sports venues? There are enough of those.
Yeah, well, it's true, isn't it?
You
know, and, you know, if I can just come back to this waterfront bloody stadium that sort of keeps popping its head up all the time, you know, I'm sorry, I get why Leo Malloy would want that to go ahead because, you know, he's got a restaurant bar down there.
Mm.
You know, that's great. It's going to be good for him.
Mm.
But, you know, the fact is that it's not necessary and it's empty most of the time. You know, if you're going to build something down on the waterfront, what about this as an idea? A huge art gallery of Maori Pacific art. It would be a destination for people coming from overseas. And that could be a one floor, a whole other floor, New Zealand music. New Zealand music, you know, that sort of thing. Top floor restaurants, cafes, bars, whatever. You know, that, to me, would make much better sense than a stadium which stands empty most of the time.
Yes. Now, Graham, we've got time for one more song before we wrap things up. Once again, talking to Graham Reid. He's got an article on the St. James on the Audio Culture site. I'm just scrolling back up to the top of it to get the title of it. St. James Theatre, Auckland. Graham Reid. What's the last song you'd like to go out on?
Okay, Tammy Nielsen, who's the great Tammy Nielsen, who's got a new album out called Kingmaker. You know, Tammy is it's such an extraordinary talent, it's hard to get your head around what she's capable of. And this, you know, the reason I've chosen Kingmaker is because it's the title track of this new album, which went to number one on the New Zealand charts. I'm so pleased for it. But the video for this was actually shot in the St. James, and you can have a look at that online at Audio Culture. So there's the Avondale Bowling Club one, and there's Tammy's one. And I just think everybody deserves to hear Tammy's voice, because this is a spectacular song. When I first heard it, I thought, my God, it's a James Bond thing. It's that big and enormous, and she's got the voice to carry it off. So even though Tammy hasn't done a show in the St. James, I just thought it was kind of relevant right now. And, it's a brand new album out now.
Excellent. Hey, thank you very much, Graham.
My pleasure, Tony.
Thank you to you, and thank you to Audio Culture.
Kingmaker, game changer, it could all be mine. I'm waiting, years fading, one by one like pearls you throw to the swine. Kingmaker,